Welcome to the Due Diligence Podcast, where we explore how leaders make and execute their biggest decisions, from transactions to founding organizations to career pivots and beyond. This podcast is produced by Sleeping Giant Capital. We connect executive talent and capital to invest in West Michigan businesses. To learn more, visit us at sleepinggiantcapital.com or stop by our office in downtown Kalamazoo.
All right. Welcome to the Due Diligence Podcast. Rick Barnhat, you are our first seller on the podcast. Did you know that, Rick?
I did not.
Very first seller on the podcast. So it's a special honor to have you on here. I think our audience is going to learn a ton from hearing from some of the things that a seller went through. Now, full disclosure, you sold to one of our CEOs in residence, Kelly Conway, and she's doing fantastic. And she's so happy to have you as part of our team. So you didn't stop working. So we'll talk about some of that. But you know, I think there's a lot of insights that we can learn from you. So why don't you give us a 30-second pitch on who Rick is? I got one question after that. I want to talk about that book behind you and your book with Dick Vitale before we get too far into this, but. Give us Rick Barnhat. Who's Rick Barnhat?
So I would say the short answer is believer, husband, father in those orders, in that order. Grew up really, really humble beginnings. First child in my entire family to ever attend college, in which I paid for every credit hour. I did that with a couple of different ways. I worked my way through my first 2 years and then went in the Army and was blessed enough to get the GI Bill to finish out my degree. And so, married 28 years to my amazing wife, Christy, got two wonderful boys, and live in sunny Florida. So that's me.
Sunny Florida. And we should tell everyone your son was just in the NCAA golf finals, correct? It's not the final four. What do they call the golf finals?
No, it's just NCAA D1 golf championship, national championship. So yeah, he just played in that this past week.
Yeah, congratulations to him. Thanks. Okay, so before we get too far, tell us about the book Never Give Up, and it's you and Dick Vitale on there. So tell us how that all came about. Yeah.
So it was really unusual, Derek. I got a phone call out of the blue one day, and I don't really. I very rarely answer those calls, but for some reason I did. And it was this publishing company, and they had been doing all this research, and they said, we're putting this book together with Dickie V, and we're looking for folks, their path or their journey that kind of matches this Never Give Up. And I thought, well, wow, that's like one of my sayings for my entire life. You just don't quit. You just don't give up. And so I said, well, I'd like to learn more about it. And then of course that led to, hey, you know, we'll do this book and you can use it for marketing. You can use it as a legacy. You can use it for whatever. And so, I agreed to do it. And, it was a ton of fun. Got to kind of tell about me and Rep Light. And then, I got to tell a story about a young man that we hired, Ben Miller. It was probably one of my favorite stories of running Rep Light. As a matter of fact, I still have a voicemail on my cell phone from 2016 that from Ben that I'll never erase. As long as I can hold it, that voicemail, I'll have it, because it's he talked about how we changed his life, his family's life, his professional trajectory. It was a really good story. So the book was fun. Got to spend a couple times with Dickie V. He's an amazing man. He just got clear of cancer. Had an amazing attitude as he was going through his treatment. But it was a fun project. A lot of fun.
Yeah. So good book. Never Give Up: Stories of Grit, Determination, Tenacity, and Triumph, which I think is probably our segue into you starting your journey into entrepreneurship and starting Rep Light. So, you had sold Rep Light about a month ago now, almost 2 months ago. But let's go back to the start in your path to entrepreneurship. What made you start a company? What was, you remember some of the, Was it a call? Was it just never give up attitude? Were you sick of corporate America? What was it, Rick?
So I'm not sure, other than a childhood job, if I've ever had a job. I was thinking about this earlier. I don't think I've ever had a job where I was an incumbent. I've always, even in corporate America, I did something different. Started with Stryker, built their ProCare team from 0 to 800 people. Went to Intuitive Surgical, did the same thing, built their associate sales, clinical sales team. And really, those were two great experiences. But then I thought one day, why am I doing this for one company at a time? There's the KPIs and the value prop here could really affect a lot of different companies. And so, like most things, I went to my wife and I said, "Hey, this is a goofy thought that I've got." And Chrissy said, "You know the rules, Rick. If you follow the Lord's will and you give it everything you got, I'm gonna be behind you." And so, I happen to know a company that needed kind of the services. So I called an old colleague from Stryker. I said, "Hey, Greg, I'm thinking about doing this, and you'd be my first customer." He said, "Let's go." So that was 15 years ago. And so we hired about 20 people from him, and then we were launched. A lot of people asked me about the name. If you go back about 15, 18 years ago, there was a lot of talk in the industry, in the medical device industry, about going repless. Everyone said, "We're paying reps too much money. We don't need the reps." Those of us in the industry knew that repless was not a thing. So rep light came from not rep list, but maybe rep light. So that's how the goofy name came up. And I could spell it with not much difficulty. So that was good. But that's how it all came about. I've been doing this, Derek. I mean, I hired, 1,000 people at Stryker and probably 500 at Intuitive Surgical, and it was like, it's what I love. I mean, I love taking these folks and giving them a place and a platform to thrive. So it was a kind of natural thing for me.
So it's just natural. I mean, so Replite, the name. I do like the name. It's not a goofy name, right? And it's easy to spell. But it is. I didn't know the Replist story until just now. But really, your fantastic capability of building great sales teams, right? Especially in the med device biopharmacy space, and you help other companies do that to simplify it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, if I've got a gift, it's probably recognizing talent. If that's a thing, it I can be on with someone for a pretty short period of time and kind of pick whether they're going to be successful. No one bats 1,000. I don't either. They're all of us swing and miss, but we've had a really good run, and really, through RepLite's history, we've got about a 95% positive attrition. So we only lose about 5%. Industry average is about 24%. So we've done a really good job of picking people who have been successful.
Okay, so you made it sound super easy to go start a company, which now I'm jealous because we had a lot of headaches. And your books, Never Give Up, Grit, Determination, Tenacity. Talk about some of the biggest challenges you face, kind of getting off the ground or running your company. Everyone laughs when I ask a business owner this; they're endless, right? We all make 1,000 mistakes a day, let alone a month, a year. But what were some of the biggest challenges that maybe are unexpected challenges? Either one of those.
So, yeah, one of the biggest things I think that shocked me is I found it really difficult to get outside of my network. Like, I'd been in the space for 20 years, so I knew a lot of people in medical device and pharmaceutical. And it was pretty easy building business when I was talking to people who knew me, right? But it was getting to the people that didn't know me or know anything about my past. And I think the reason being is that what we do is outside the normal process of these companies. You have recruiters. There's a gazillion headhunters out there, and then you have these staffing agencies. There's a lot of those out there, but no one had taken it and merged those two together. And so, in the early days, I would hear, "Well, that's not the way we do it," or, "We use recruiters and not, or we use the staffing agencies. We don't know what this hybrid approach is about." And really, what I would tell them is, this is a hybrid talent management company that helps you build and scale your teams, fewer risks while saving time and money. And if you got them to that point, most people were like, well, who thought of this? Like, we needed this 20 years ago. Because in you know, mainstream, if you hire someone and they don't perform, it takes a lot to get them off the bench. You know, there's a long process. And we eliminated that process. Someone's not performing, they got to go. So, but again, I think the biggest challenge was getting people to understand there was a different model, because for 100 years, they ran the same offense. So,
yeah, different model. It is in a very interesting business model. I mean, we won't get into it today, but yeah, it's super interesting, nice little niche you built. We love the company. Let's talk about just the high level, you know, because we want to talk about the selling journey. This whole podcast is about diligence, but from a background perspective, you know, what are some of the key things you learned, you know, kind of day to day running a small business for 15 years now, 15 plus years? What are some key lessons that you had in there?
Obviously, you're going to hit some valleys, and valleys only last as long as you let them last. You know, it's funny, you see the cartoon where, you know, God's plan is like this for you, and you know, your plan's like this. That's a true statement, especially in my experience. You know, you would in the early days, we had one client, right? And if we lost that client, we didn't have a business anymore. So I learned pretty quick, I got to get a lot of clients so that if one leaves for some reason, then we're okay. So I think the fact that, you know, do your body of work, or I feel like you do your body of work with a level of intentionality. There's a purpose for what we do, and it's not just to make money. That's a side product of what we do. It's a good side product. I mean, it's how we feed our family, but, you know, it's funny. Everyone on the team, has gotten to a point over the years where when we approach a candidate, it's not necessarily for the fee. It's how do we place that candidate in a great spot for the client and for the candidate. And once you get that intentionality, it changes the way you work. You know, I heard a commencement address 30 years ago, and I can't even remember the gentleman's name, but he's like, if you love what you do, you never work another day. And I haven't worked in 15 years. I mean, this is just, but I guess for the folks out there who are building or running a company, you're going to have setbacks. I think it's how you react to the setbacks. You know, I got to a point where a setback would just challenge me. It would not frustrate or make me mad. It would light this fire about, you know, and so what I learned to do is just, you know, whether you lose a customer, or you hire a bad employee, or, you know, whatever comes, it's the mindset in which you respond to that. And so there's a lot of times sitting at my desk, especially in the early years, that I had to take whatever challenge there was and sit with it for a second, which is not my normal personality. Typically, I'm a go, 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 go. But I learned to sit with it for a minute and figure out how the response could be the best that we could do with it, right? And so I think it's, you know, I hear a lot of entrepreneurs, and I talk to a lot of them, that, you know, they have something catastrophic happen in their business, and they're just like, you know, throw up their hands and like, this is nuts. I don't, you know, I would challenge you to say, you know, just run kind of a SWAT on it. Like, why it happened? What can we do better? And just figure out the way to avoid it next time. So I don't know if that directly answers your question, but that's kind of the way I've approached things.
I love that cartoon, the wiggly line. And, you know, we're in the finance business, and we build a lot of financial models, and somehow they always go up and to the right in a straight line. I don't understand. Like, there's no wobbling in your financial model. Like, revenue always goes like that. It's never bumpy. It's never right. And I started saying about 2 years ago, your model's wrong. They're all wrong, right? This is what we hope happens, but they're all wrong. So stop thinking that's like the source of truth. It's not. It's a forecast at best. So super, super interesting. In 15 years of running the business, I think, you had the setbacks, but you figured out a way to deal with that. What is probably the thing that challenged you the most that maybe someone that's not running a business or a small business owner might want to hear about?
One of the things that I struggled with, and I probably early on should have addressed it. I tried to address it, but didn't, is the whole brand recognition and marketing. I'm a pretty frugal guy, so I would try to take the cheapest route every time. I try to find the folks who do SEO for a couple hundred bucks a month, right? And let's do that. And so I think going back, well, I don't think, I know, going back, I would have kind of surrounded myself with SMEs in different verticals, marketing, brand recognition. I would have surrounded myself with really good people, endured the financial pain of paying those people, and probably did a different job in that aspect. I think we've done a fair job in picking out talent. We've done a fair job of servicing our clients. But, and the other thing too, I had this conversation with an entrepreneur yesterday. One of the other challenges or things that I did wrong early on is because of the way our model is, when we're talking about SEO or marketing, I never let any of those people use recruiter. I never let them use staffing agency. I never let them use any of those words, right? Like, it's keywords. Because I didn't want to be modeled as that. I wanted to be something different. If any entrepreneur is listening to me, don't make that mistake. That's a terrible mistake. Those words are what people are searching Google for. And that's how people get to you. But of course, I don't know if it was pride or if it was just, I don't want to be labeled a recruiter. But I'll give you an example. As soon as I realized what I had done, we went from about 90 organic visitors a month to 5,000 in over a period of about 2 months, just because me being able to tag us as a recruiter or staffing group, because people were searching for those words. And so it's paramount in getting out of your own way sometimes and listing. I always tell people, and we'll get to this question, I'm sure, as to why I decided to do this or sell. But I've always believed there's smarter people in the room. I just didn't act on it for a long time with this section. I just thought I knew what's best, and I didn't.
Yeah, with the story of marketing, half works, half doesn't. You just don't know which half, right? With marketing, it's we're hiring a specialist right now because we can't. It's a hard thing to crack, right? What's the message you want out there? But it's the message that you want. But it's not that. It's what's everybody looking for. What's the value you're providing, and what is everybody, even if you're not that common term, what does everybody else use as the common term? But that's a really interesting feedback. Really, really big mistake in getting out of your way and let the smart people do what you're paying them to do, right? That's a hard one for any entrepreneur. So biggest surprise or benefit running a small business? 15 years, you left building these teams for these corporations. What do you think the biggest surprise or biggest benefit was, or positive surprise or benefit was in running a small business for 15 years and stepping out of your own?
Derek, I thought I'd have a lot more time off. I thought, start my own business, I make my own hours. Not true. No. Not in my case. In my case, that's not true because, I'm a sales guy. So when a client wants something, you give it to them. And when you get a little taste of success, you want more and you want more and you want more. I remember early on, and this is a hard lesson to learn, but I'll share it. I would take a cell phone call anytime for any reason. And I talk about my wife a lot because I adore her. But one night the boys were little, and one night after dinner, we put them to bed, read our stories, and she said, "Hey, I need to have a word with you." And I'm like, "What's going on?" And she goes, You need to put the cell phone down. And she goes, I'm not telling you to put it down like right after work, but why don't you give the family, 5:30 to 8:30 in the evening and spend time with your boys without a cell phone? And then if you put them to bed and you need to go back and finish stuff up at 9 or 10 at night, so be it. But you've got to give the boys quality time over quantity. And as painful as that was for me, it was a huge blessing because it taught me that all that work can still get done. But I don't just need to be in the room with my family. I need to be intentional on being in the room with my family. So, I thought, I'd take all these trips and work 3 days a week. That was a little bit of a surprise. I found myself consumed with the business, which is, I mean, again, you love what you do. I didn't see that I was making much of a sacrifice. I just thought it was fun.
That was a weird way to talk about a benefit. Well, it's positive, but no,
but totally I think the benefit. No. I mean, it was two part. The reason I answered it like that, I think a lot of entrepreneurs think that you get to make your own schedule, right? And I think you can, but you have to do it. You have to be intentional in doing it, and you have to realize that the work is going to be there. You can't be great unless you're well rested and ready to go. I think the biggest benefit for me, from a personal and professional perspective, is I made my own policies. Like I didn't have a corporate thing that had to, where if something got approved, I had to send it through 6 people's signature. For me, if I made a decision, I said, hey, team, here's what we're doing. And so I like to move kind of quick. And so it was really cool to be in a work environment when I could make decisions and move.
Yeah. Yeah. Good points. Although the policies start to creep in after a while, and sometimes you don't know where they came from, which is interesting when you're running it. And you decided a year ago, and you're like, why would I decide on that? I like your once you start your own business, it's like, well, you don't have a boss. No, your customer, your boss, your employees, your boss. You're serving everybody then at that point, right? And it's the flexibility. What was it? You can work, any 12 hours a day you want, but it better be around 12, right? You can pick and choose, but generally you're starting around 4 and shutting down and put your family time in there. It just means you're going to work afterwards, right? But that's really good advice on being intentional and present with the family. Something I think we all forget a little bit. Let's move on, right? Let's talk about selling, because this I really wanted to hope to use this experience to inform others on what it's like, what you went through, some lessons learned, why you decided, why sellers decide. It's all different for all of them, I think. So it's good to help personal stories and journeys and through this path. So I think is thank you for doing this, which is unique. So, what led to the decision? What led to the decision? It was time. You built this great company, great stories, some benefits. What led to the decision to sell?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. We had a really good 2023, best top line year ever. We were poised to do the same thing in 24. And really, Derek, it came down to, I felt personally that under my single leadership, I'd probably taken it as far as I could take it. And I wanted to surround myself with more brain power. So that's, it's kind of like Brett Favre, you retire when you had a good year. And so we had a good year, and I'm like, okay, if we're going to take this to the next 3 levels, 6 levels, 10 levels, I've got to bring some gunpowder in here to help do that. So that's really what led to it. I mean, I'm blessed. I'm not out, doing manual labor, running a jackhammer on the side of the interstate. So it's not physically demanding. But I felt like if I put some more people around the table, that we could do some really cool things.
Yeah. You got a great one in Kelly there too. She's a great partner. She's a little bit of, She's with gunpower. Is that what you said? You need some gun, more gunpower. She brings some gunpower. That's for sure. Okay, so, well, up front, did you have goals when you're approaching? I need to put some more people around the table. Did you have goals? Because you stayed on. You rolled equity. We can talk about that if you want. But did you have goals, or you held ownership? Rolling equity. Did you have goals when you approached the sale? What were you looking for? What was important to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, first off, I'll tell you, I had no idea about the journey. Like, I don't know most entrepreneurs, but I was completely ignorant of what it took in the process. My goal was to find a partner that, during my time being with that partner, we could see exponential growth. Because I feel like, one of the things that I really wanted to have happen that I think still can happen is I wanted the RepLite name to be kind of an industry recognized name. Like, if you need B2B talent, these are the guys and girls that can help you get it in place quickly and with fewer risks. So I've always wanted that. And so I think for me, and I want to be a part of it, at least, and like I told you, and I've told Kelly, my initial time to stay is 3 years. But I mean, if we're having fun and we're doing all good stuff, like I'll go as long as I can go. But I really wanted to have someone, a partner, come in and us together really blow this. I don't say blow it up. That's a negative connotation, but really make something powerful out of it.
Yeah, and we've mentioned Kelly a couple of times. For those listening, it's Kelly Conway. She was the CEO that CEO in residence here at Sleeping Giant Capital that ended up leading the acquisition of RepLite. Okay, so you talked about a journey. You didn't. You said journey. That makes it seem longer than overnight, right? That implies, or has some implied connotations there. So talk about, what was it like? What was the process like for you? How long did it take from start to from your initial thought to finish? Start there, and then let's go through the process.
A year.
A year, one full year. Yeah, that seems about right. Okay,
Yeah.
so talk about the journey a little bit. What was the journey like for you?
So we were kind of blessed. We used an agency, a broker, as you know. And when we went on the market, we were probably, I don't know, two weeks in, and the broker was saying, "We've never seen this much activity on any company we've ever sold." So, you're feeling, all right, well, and then we started getting offers, and we end up having 45 offers on RepLite. So you're high as a kite as an entrepreneur. You're like, wow, this is amazing. But a lot of those offers are not real. A lot of them are not intentional. A lot of them are people just trying to grab a great deal on a thrift store shop deal or whatever, trying. And so you go from being here, then you start selecting people to meet with, and then obviously it gets more intense. And I actually enjoyed most of the management meetings coming through the process. There were couple that I didn't enjoy because I knew in the first 5 minutes I didn't want to work with these folks. But I would tell you that, and I think my wife would tell you, is there would be a day where I was super excited, and there the next day I'd be like, what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? Like, this is dumb. Like, I should just, just keep going. So there was a lot of that. Like, there was a lot of, like, I call it a roller coaster, because, man, you could be on cloud nine one day, and the next day, and really, if you think about it kind of goes back to how entrepreneurship is. I mean, that's kind of being an entrepreneur is the same way. Like, you get a big deal and you're all pumped, and then you lose it, and you're like, ah, oh, but I had some really good counsel around me, friends that had been through this process slash journey, and so they had given me a lot of wisdom about, you know, the things I'm saying to you right now, like these things are going to happen, dude. And you're going to love someone and they're going to throw you a low number, and you're going to hate someone, they're going to throw you a high number. It's just going to be all over the board. And I will tell you this, the biggest mistake I made as an entrepreneur, the number one mistake, well, as an entrepreneur that decided to sell, the number one mistake is the absence of data. When I'm in the early stages of the company, I'm not tracking hardly any KPIs. I mean, I'm tracking revenue and expenses. that's what I care about, right? And it makes sure there's a margin in there. But when you start to go through this process, the folks who are looking to invest their money in you, they want to know the data behind the numbers, all of the data. And, you know, we had to stretch to get it. I mean, it took a lot of work to get it. And again, it was, I think as you're trying to build a company, you don't think about, I'll give you an example. So one of the questions that I was asked during this process was, what's your days to hire? So when you get a rec, how fast do you fill it? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, we fill it as soon as we can. I mean, that was my answer. And it's a terrible answer. If I would have known that was a KPI that I would have been tracking for 15 years, and it would have been real easy to track. You know, it's data points like that, that if anybody, you know, in the future thinks that they want to have an exit, even if you don't think the data is meaningful at the time, track and measure everything and have data. Because once the offers start coming out, the due diligence starts, you're going to need all the data you can get. Plus, I assure you, you do not have everything they're going to ask for.
Yeah.
I didn't have a thimble of it.
Well, I hope we weren't too hard on you, Rick. I'm starting to feel bad now, but in general, right. Every time we get a piece of data from the acquisition side, so I'll film this, it just opens up more questions, right? I filled this many recs. Well, how long did it take them to fill those? Is that a 1 year? Is that a 2 month process? Okay. It's a 3 month process. Well, then how many people did they interview to fill? Like there's always another question beyond the data point. And so sometimes it can't stop, but I agree with you. You know, we always say who's under the tent, like who's in the know on your team that's going to help with the data, because, you know, building your team around you, that's going to help get through diligence, you know, and things like that. So
that stuff as well. I mean, that stuff as well, because we had a really small team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I didn't want to do is go early on and say, hey, I need y'all to help me get all this together so I can sell the company. Because, mm-hmm. I didn't want the team to go anywhere. I love our team, and I thought that would scare them to death. So it's a balance in there. Like, when do you tell your team, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing, and how do you give them enough comfort to be okay with that?
How'd you do that? Because that is a hard part. Some owners that we've worked with won't tell their team until after the sale. They're the only ones that know. Some owners try to let, you know, because of the data requests and diligence, you know, a few key people. How did you handle that personally? How did you go through that part of the journey?
I was late in the process. I think we had an LOI, or our first. We had three, obviously. I think we had a first one before I broached the subject. And for me, it was, you know, I had talked to you guys enough and Kelly to know that, or I was given the assurance that we weren't rattling the whole cage right out of the gate, right? We were just going to, like, do what we're doing and try to, you know, improve things. And just so, you know, mine was, hey, nothing's changing. You know, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, and I'm still going to be here. So you're still going to have to deal with me for a period of time. And then I think the other thing that we did is before we closed, but after the LOI, is I actually brought Kelly here and brought the team in, and we actually had a meal together on my back porch. And that was a big help, because I think they got a chance to meet the new CEO, and they got a chance to hear directly from her before the deal's closed. And I thought that was important because they were going to have to make some decisions. And we just had a really nice meal, and we met the next day and kind of got to know each other. And I think my team left that meeting feeling a lot better than what they had felt before, which was awesome.
That's great to hear. So other surprises in the process that, you know, the journey took a year. You get like these 40 offers. I don't know how this is even happening. Builders are throwing offers out like crazy lately without meeting anybody. Or, you know, we tend to take a different approach, a lot slower. We want to meet everybody. We want to understand everything. Other surprises like that you came across in the journey, or other things that you think potential sellers need to be aware of, or potential buyers that say, hey, don't do this. If we did anything wrong, or if some of the other people did something wrong, you know, suggestions.
Something became important to me is as we're going through these management meetings and I'm learning about these companies, it become very apparent that the offer in itself is only one small piece of the deal. In my deal, I had a lot higher offers for our business, like in the terms of dollars. But I could not see myself being in that environment, or my team being attached to that leadership team, if that makes sense. It's hard for an entrepreneur because, you know, you got this amount of money with this company and this amount of money is offering this company, and you're like, yeah, but this can really do better for my family and my life. But then if you take this big, larger amount of money and then you hate day two, it came down to really, really and truly, I mean, I would say there's three, but there was two, but I think Sleeping Giant and Kelly, I just got the feeling that, you know, these are folks that I can trust, that will do the right things when the right things need to happen. And I can see myself being a part of that team. And so that was an important kind of aha moment for me. Don't make it all about the money, because you know, if you don't gel with the team, you're not going to make it through your earnout period. Like, you're just not going to do it. You're going to, you know, you'll just quit. And so I would say when you do get offers to invest in your business, try to look at everything, not just the money coming in. I probably had too many conversations with Kelly before we closed. But I wanted to know, like, I want to know about your beliefs. I want to know about your philosophies. I want to know about your attributes and your characteristics, because if those aren't aligned, I saw that as oil and water, and you can throw all the money in the world at it, but you're not going to enjoy what you do. So that's the biggest thing. I mean, you know, the buyers, they're going to look at all your data. So you might as well look at theirs and see what it's all about. I've talked to guys who have been through this, and they got in with bad leadership, bad money, and it's just terrible. It's a lose lose. So that's my biggest thing for if you're selling, you know, make sure that you can cohabitate with these folks, you know, as well as, you know, make it a fair offer. I'll give you an example, Derek, and you still do this, and I'm you know, I've never said this to you, but I, every meeting that we got on through the process, everyone would start, you know, asking their questions, and you would stop and say, hey, how's your family? How's your son in golf? You know, how's the wife? How are the kids? That sounds kind of minuscule, but to me, it was huge, because our work's important, but there's a lot more to us than our work. And whether you were genuine or not, I truly felt like you were genuine, but whether you were genuine or not, you stop the information exchange to just ask, you know, just, hey, how's everybody doing? And it was things like that along the way that said to me, this is where RepLite needs to be. This is the kind of company that we try to be full of grace, and we try, you know, I tell our girls all the time, our team, when you interact with someone, I want them to feel better when they leave than when they came in. And I got that from Sleeping Giant. Somehow, I don't know if you faked me out or not.
I was genuinely curious in your son's golf. I was super jealous, actually. I was like, how did you get your son to this level of golf? And how are you enjoying, like, and you're selling your company while you're running around the country watching him play golf? It sounded like an awesome life. But thanks for that. And Rick, we're going to try. You keep saying 3 years. We're going to hold on you way longer than that. We got big plans that you got to help us grow with. So, we'll talk about your family. You know, you talk about this, your wife, I know that, and your kids, and some of the emotions. What was it like emotionally for you and your family and your team? You know, any big surprises there on the emotional side of things?
Again, I'd gotten really good counsel. For me, RepLite was my baby, right? And you're handing your baby to someone else. Now, the good thing that Kelly Conway has done, is Kelly's not positioned herself like that at all to me in these past 2 months. It's, hey, partner, what do you want to do here? And so it's lessened that emotional drain of you've given your baby up for adoption, you'll never see it again. It's more like, hey, we're co-parenting this thing a little bit. So that's been a big help. I will tell you, from a selfish standpoint, one of the things that's crazy is, since we've created this partnership, in the last 6 weeks, we probably had more business come in than we've had in the last 6 months.
Yeah, you guys are doing very well from what I it's amazing to see the growth already.
It's not because of any marketing. It's I don't know what it is, but like I told Kelly Friday last week, I mean, we sent out 3 agreements in 1 week. That, I mean, if we set out 1 or 2, 3 a month, that's pretty good. Because those can have a lot of different body, you know, a lot of different employees in them, but it's been good. So the part of me goes, oh man, that's a lot of money that's getting ready to start coming in. And, you know, now it's not all the Barnett's money, right? Now it's the company's money. So that's a little bit of a, you know, just something that I've, from an emotional standpoint, you see these POs getting paid and you're like, wow. But I think, you know, I'll tell you what Chapman, my youngest son, said to me, and it was really impactful. We kept it from the boys. So Christy and I didn't really tell the boys. I should tell you, Chapman's 20 and Rhett's 23. So we kept this whole process away from the boys until we knew it was going to happen. And then when it happened, we let them know that it happened. And out of the blue, my 20-year-old calls me, Chapman. And he said, Dad, how you doing? I said, I'm doing great. He goes, how do you feel about selling your company? I said, I feel good. It's a good thing. And he said, Dad, I need to tell you something. I'm like, yeah, man. He goes, I just want you to think about this. He goes, you had an idea and you started something with $0. No one had done it and you started it by yourself. You grew this thing and someone paid you multi-millions of dollars for it. Dad, you got to be proud of that. And I was sitting in my vehicle in my driveway when we were on the phone. And I got to tell you, Derek, I just started weeping. I'm like, I never even thought about it like that. Like, you know, for me, there was a lot of things in there, but for your youngest son to say, I'm just so proud of what you've done. You know, you're just like, and I get teary-eyed now thinking about it because it's just, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm not supposed to be here right now. Like, if you look at my upbringing and where I was raised and how I was raised, I'm not supposed to be the guy that sold the company. If you do the law of, you know, stats and you put people in categories, I'm not in that category that would do that. So to have done it, there's a sense of accomplishment, but more importantly, I feel like this family's just blessed and we're just grateful that we got to this point. And now let's go have some fun and grow it. So it's a long-winded answer to
that. No, that's a great answer, Rick. That's a fantastic story. I always say, you know, I don't think my parents would have ever thought I would be sitting, you know, on this side of the screen doing what I'm doing. And I think everyone's surprised. But so it's good to hear that. And my daughter's entering middle school and she has, you know, that's kind of cool that you do and you have your own company. It's kind of nice for them to see. It is a proud moment. So the fact that Chapman, with all that he had going on, because I know he's in the middle of his whole golf season and everything while this was happening, an NCAA championships, to sit and reflect, that shows good parenting too there, Rick, which is impressive.
Thank you. And I should mention Rhett too, because this is something that's funny with Rhett, our oldest son. So Rhett is a salesperson in the technology space. And this was funny. When he was going through the interview process with Dell Technologies, he calls me and he goes, "Hey," he goes, "we just had this presentation contest today." And he goes, "I blew it out of the water." And I said, "Dude, that's awesome. Congratulations." He goes, they're going to offer me a job. And I'm like, "That's fantastic." And he said, "I had no idea that I'd been in training for this my entire life." And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You've been punching into me how to sell forever." And I didn't even And it was one of these things where he's like, "I've been training for this my entire life and had no idea." So it's again, I don't give me, you know, Derek, I'll go for hours talking about my family, so I'll restrain myself.
All right, so let's go back to other sellers and or buyers, right? So besides for just throwing bad IOIs or LOIs out there, what advice would you have, you know, for future sellers that are going to listen to this, you know, besides for start tracking data, collect the data, make sure you have answers to these questions, but or future buyers, what advice do you have?
For the sellers, the other thing I would tell you is get some counsel around you, and not counsel has a monetary gain. If they have a monetary gain, they're not, in my mind, those are not the folks you need. You probably need those too. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people for monetary gain that have to be in these deals, but get some counsel that cares about you and doesn't make a dime from the sale or the buy of a business. I had probably five or six of those folks, and it was a blessing that we were close enough from a friend perspective that I could call them and ask them, "Hey, what do you think about this?" And, you know, sometimes they gave me solid advice that I don't want to hear. You know, I know that we had an LOI came in and there was some things in the LOI, and I called my one buddy that has done this three times. He goes, "Tell him to pound sand. Tell him you don't want the deal." And I'm like, "I can't do that." And he's like, "Yes, you can. Yes, you can. It's your company, and that's just not the way you should do it." I said, "Well," and we didn't do the deal with them. So I think getting the counsel, the data. The other thing is, you know, understand why you're doing it. If you're a seller, understand why you're doing it. I had to keep telling myself, "All right, you've taken it to here. You think it can go to here. Here's an opportunity to do that," right? And even the night before we closed, probably shouldn't tell you this, Derek, but I said, "I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it." This is on a Sunday night. We're supposed to close on Monday.
I was on some of those emails on that Sunday night, Rich. You sent some emails out the night before, if you don't remember.
I'm not doing this deal. And I had a guy say, a buddy said, "Hey, do you like these people?" "Yes." "Do you think they can help you grow this business?" "Yes." "Why are you pausing?" And he said, just give me a good reason why you're pausing. And I said, well, they need to pay me more money. He's like, it's not a reason. You're too far down the road. That's not. He said, why are you pausing? And I said, I don't know. And he goes, it's because you're scared. You're a grown man that's scared. You're offering your child up. He said, but why did you start this process? And I said to grow it. He goes, okay, just answer your question twice. He said, go make the great deal and then grow the heck out of it. And that's what we're doing. So it's, but I think that's normal. I mean, everybody I talked to said that you get those cold feet. And, you know, that's just a normal part of the process. But again, you have to go back to the root cause, I think. You know, what motivated you to sign that document in the first place, right? What motivated you to and for me, again, I'll say it 1,000 times, I do believe that we are going to do something special here. I really do.
So. Yeah, I think the 11th hour, 12th, last hour, whatever you want to call it, there's a lot that happens there emotionally for people. And I think if there's not a strong relationship between buyer and seller and everyone doesn't feel comfortable, you're not going to get through that. We've lost one that late, and it was really hard on our buyer.
For the broker, too, because yeah. If broker, then now you've got three people in that team.
Yeah.
And that.
Yeah. Yeah, the telephone game gets bad. Sometimes, you know, they're talking out of both sides of mouths and things like that. But no, I just, the 11th hour is important in managing those, the emotions. And it's so hard, you know, and I liked your advice about the council. We always ask, you know, who's in your team? Who's coming on this journey with you? Like, it doesn't have to be inside, like I said, under the tent, but who's your outside counsel? Who's your wealth advisor? Who's your legacy planner, right? You're going to come into some money. What's the legacy plan there? Who's your lawyer that's going to help you? Who's, you know, the person you're going to go talk to when you think something's not normal and you can't talk to us because we're on the other side of the table during that process, right? Like, it's totally normal. You're like, no, it's not. I mean, well, go talk to your counsel, right? That makes it easier and the deal goes smoother. So that's good advice. Any pitfalls to avoid for a potential seller?
Protect your trailing 12 at all costs.
Did you know what TTM was before?
No clue. I told you at the start of this, we had a great 2023, right? I thought I was Brett Favre. I was going to take that EBITDA. We were going to put a multiplier on it. Oh. That was going to be my number. And just we start to get closer, then we have a couple deals that fall out, and here comes that TTM. I didn't even know what TTM was. Had no clue until we started this. So if you're a seller and you've got a timeline, do everything you can to protect the TTM right up until the day the money moves.
Yeah, I think it's hard because, I mean, especially for a company your size, your company is actually large, but your team is smaller, Rick. So you're going through diligence, you're selling the process, you're working with brokers, you're working with lawyers, but you're also going to run the business. And something's got to give, right? There's only so many hours in a day. You got your family, you know. But I think I agree with you, you know, that trailing 12 months, because the bank's looking at, everyone's staring at that right up until close. And so, yeah, that's a really good answer. Keep running the business.
Yeah, it caught me by surprise because, as you know, Derek, we have contracts that come on and go off, right? And mm-hmm. and we have people that because of our model, our clients can take people from us after they've hit a certain time period, right? We got down in the last 2 or 3 months and we had so many people convert that, you know, we started doing this. And I'm like, well, wait, just give us a couple months. It'll be right back up. And that's not how it works. I mean,
yeah,
you can think it works like that, but it doesn't matter. So protect your TTM.
Protect your team. That's the best advice you could have given any seller right there. I like it. To speak in my language now, Rick. Really good stuff. So how's post-sale life? We'll go there and then I'll go rapid fire because it's almost an hour.
I don't see a difference. I mean, I'm still doing what I'm doing. I'm trying to, you know, do it as the best I can. I'm trying to make sure that when there is a decision that I don't just make it. That's a little bit of a learning curve for me. Typically, all right, let's do this. And now I've got to say, well, hang on, let me talk it over. But again, I will tell you that, you know, what Kelly said is, look, unless it's something that's major in the business, you do, I mean, you've been doing it for 15 years, and you've done it well, so keep doing it. So I don't feel a lot different. I still feel like I'm responsible for the number. You know, I'm still working full time. So, I do plan, during the good weather to play a little more golf on Friday afternoons than what I have in the past. But I don't think, and maybe other sellers are different, but because I sold, I don't feel a release of responsibility at all. Zero. Like, it's the same for me. Like, I'm still chomping at the bit trying to get deals done. Like, and it's, I think it's just who I am. I mean, I just went through this personality profile that I got the results yesterday, and it's not just personality, but it's a lot of things. And this guy was going through it with me from Pondera, and it was funny how accurate those things are. You know, he's like, you just can't stop, can you? And I'm like, no. He's like, it's all over. He goes, he said, you got a 99 emotional intelligence EQ. He goes, you don't know how to stop. And I said, I just never give up. I don't know.
No. Well, that's, I think Kelly's, you know, as you guys are building this firm out, right? You're going to add pieces. I think as of the timing of this recording, you added a couple pieces yesterday. So life's going to start to change a little bit, but I think she's by, you know, part of this is identifying great talent that she wants to build with her. And you're the first piece of that puzzle, and we're excited to grow with you. So let's go to rapid fire, because we hit the hour mark there, Rick, and I think I could talk to you forever. I know you're coming up in a couple of weeks. If you got the clubs in your ship sticks or whatever, we can go play some golf. Maybe if you have time while you're up here. I know you guys got some big contracts to go see. So let's go right to rapid fire questions. Favorite leader?
Jesus.
Courage or compassion?
Courage.
Great ideas or great execution?
Yes.
Yes. A word to describe your leadership style as you ran RepLite.
Servant.
Servant leaders. We love it. Night owl or early bird?
Early bird.
Early bird. You got a morning routine? What's your morning routine, Rick?
Yeah, so I'm up pretty early. Probably around 5:15. Do Bible time, quiet time, work out, and then I'm in my office typically by 7:30 or 8.
Man, that sounds like Kelly's morning routine. You guys are almost identical in your morning routines. I'm going to have to talk to you when you're up here. Okay, if you were going into a challenging situation, so business, you know, entering a dangerous jungle, we used to say, but if you're going into a challenging business situation or situation, who are you bringing with you?
I'm bringing Jesus.
Okay.
I mean, he's got me here, and that's why I bring him.
Okay. If there was an animal to describe Rick's business style, any animal, what would it be and why?
So I didn't know. This is a stumping question to me. So you'll appreciate this. So this morning, we have a morning huddle. So I asked the team. So I got two answers. One was a gorilla and one was a lion.
Ooh.
The gorilla and the lion have similar attributes in the fact that they can be ferocious, but they protect the herd, period. Mm. So I think either one of those, I think, I don't know. They're, I mean, yeah. Gorilla or lion, I guess I'd go with lion.
Okay. And favorite sound. What's your favorite sound, Rick, or a sound that resonates with you? But you don't have to make it. You can just describe it. We almost had someone try to make the sound once.
I don't know. The question was, what sound describes your business style?
Okay. You can go with that one too.
All right. So the sound that describes my business style you probably don't know what this is, but there's a weapon called a Barrett 99.
Barrett 99.
Yep, you can look it up after the show. If you've ever, it's a 50 caliber sniper rifle.
Okay.
And if you've ever fired it or been around it, the sound that it makes when the hammer hits the bullet is the most unbelievable sound you'll ever hear.
Loud or like crisp or like smooth?
Crisp and just, I mean, it is super loud. It's almost like, have you ever been a professional golf tournament? Like,
yeah, the range.
So, you know, when like a Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson or one of those guys, you know, when their driver hits the golf ball, that you can't make that up. You can't, that's kind of the same thing as the Barrett 99. I used it a few times in the world of sniping, and it will take your breath to sound them. I don't know why I like it.
Yeah, I've never heard of Barrett 99, but that sound when that professional, it just sounds different when a professional, it's like a pitcher, when that professional pitcher throws it, it sounds different. When a professional golfer hits that golf ball, it sounds nothing like the way I hit it. So, all right, Rick, hey, thank you so much for joining our podcast. A lot of great lessons there. It was just a great conversation. We should do this again. I just enjoyed the hour. Thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. Excited to see what you and the team do. We're excited to see you guys grow. And thanks so much for joining us, Rick.
You got it, bud. Thank you.